This is the Drive Podcast with Josh Graham.
Now you're talking my language.
You can hear the Drive weekday afternoons 3 till 6 on WSJS.
Welcome to a Wednesday Drive. It is WSJS, News Talk Sports for the Triad. We're on the eve of the Sweet 16 tipping off. Ian Eagle.
WD needs more of a thinking man's picture.
That guy going to be joining the show in a little over 10 minutes from now. He's the new lead announcer for CBS's NCAA tournament coverage, replacing Jim Nantz as the voice of the Final Four. And let me start by asking a hoops question up front. Between the three in-state coaches that we have that's made it to the Sweet 16 this year, who has the most to gain this week and really this tournament? You can call us 336-777-1600. Certainly the YouTube chat and Twitter feed at WSJS Radio. Fair game to chime in as well. For me, there seems to be an obvious answer, and it's John Shire at Duke. Because it can't be Hubert Davis or Kevin Keats, can it? Hubert just won ACC Coach of the Year. He's already made a Final Four. It was in the national championship game that he was doing live action Tracy for the entire world to see.
Live action Tracy.
Kevin Keats just won the ACC. He made it to the Sweet 16. State hadn't won the ACC since 87. The Sweet 16 in Keats' entire tenure. Not only did he save his job in the last 2 weeks, he earned 1 to 3 years added at the end of his contract. 2 weeks ago, his contract went through 2028, and folks were talking about buying out the remainder of that. He earned 2 extra years for winning the ACC, contractually, and he earned 1 extra year for making the Sweet 16. So what else does Kevin Keats have to prove? The rest is just icing on the cake, or I guess since it's NC State basketball, just ice cream on top of it. The group of coaches, this is kind of interesting. When you add Steve Forbes to the mix, the group of coaches in the state of North Carolina, they're not going anywhere anytime soon.
Well,
that's an uncommon thing that all four coaches, all four programs in the state, ACC programs, feel good about their outlooks and with the coach that they have in place. Carolina feels good about Hubert. Duke feels good about John Shire. You got NC State with Kevin Keats now through 2031. And Wake feels great about Steve Forbes. Like, that's uncommon. The last time, they're not there yet, but the last time all four schools kept the same coaches in place, the same four coaches in place for a 5-year span or longer, was the mid-1990s. Les Robinson at State, Dave Odom at Wake, Coach K and Dean Smith. So it's been a really long time, and these guys have the programs in a pretty good place. But the one that I feel the least sure about out of those four in terms of long-term stability is Shire. Not a shot at Shire. It's more about what those other coaches have proven of late. Shire, he can buy himself some insurance for next year if he performs this weekend. You have the hype of next year's class that's going to be insane, bordering the insanity of the Zion Williamson class, Cooper Flagg coming in, other top recruits, plus Jeremy Roach is probably going to come back. Making an Elite Eight or going to the Final Four a year after winning an ACC championship in your first year in Greensboro, that would do John Shire a lot of good, or at least a lot more good than doing the same for Hubert Davis or Kevin Keats would. Houston, Duke, that is a fascinating matchup. That is the matchup I'm most looking forward to watching on Friday and throughout the Sweet 16 that starts tomorrow. On paper, it's the Cougs that are probably going to win the game. Number one seed, it's in Texas. They might be the toughest team in the country. Duke has been labeled as a soft team all year long, but Duke might have the most raw talent of anybody in the sport, and their freshmen are peaking. John Stewart tied for a team lead in rebounds coming off the bench. Jared McCain with the 30 points. Something about being called soft for a week that might bring something out of a team. That game is the one to circle. Ian Eagle will be calling it and joining us in just a bit. 336-777-1600 is the phone number. Let's go to Dwayne in Thomasville, who has an answer. And Apparently, he disagrees with my assessment that Shire has the most to gain. Dwayne, what say you?
NC State coach has the most to gain.
Keats?
Yeah, the reason being, it has nothing to do with his contract. It actually has to do with recruits and higher-level players saying, yes, this is a program where it's going to be more of a contention than just Duke, Carolina, and ACC. It gives him the opportunity to say, hey, this is a program that has taken a step forward. We're no longer the NC State of Herb Sendek and Sidney Lowe. We're more of a actual contender. And then Hubert Davis has the most to lose. First season goes to the NCAA championship game. Last year, don't even make the tournament. This year, if it ends up horribly, it shows that Carolina's not where everybody thinks they are, and they're resting on the name alone.
Let me ask you this, though. You don't think Keats achieved those things that you mentioned by winning the ACC championship in D.C. and then following that up, proving it wasn't a fluke by winning two games in March?
I think he has done good, and he has inched himself up to maybe gain more players in the top 50. If he wants to improve his recruiting class to get to the level of where Carolina and Duke's classes are, he needs to keep going.
All right.
They're on a historic run.
Yeah.
When's the last time that they went to the championship game? Balvano?
Yeah, that is the last time, 1983. Appreciate the call, Dwayne. That is an interesting way to put it if you're talking about trying to get closer to the two blue bloods. That's understandable. Your opinions, 336-777-1600 on exit WSJS Radio in the YouTube chat. Will Dalton, the executive producer of the show. WD, your movie options for next week have been narrowed down to two. The Big Lebowski, Kill Bill. Since we have his voice on our movie drop, are you cool with Ian Eagle deciding what movie you watch?
WD needs more of a thinking man's picture.
Of course. He's the most qualified.
So we'll put it to him in just a few minutes. Getting to the Panthers. Coming from the Pete Carroll tree, it wasn't a surprise to learn that Carolina Panthers coach Dave Canales was an uber-optimistic guy. Some Zen-like energy to him. But man, he showed us in the last week his level of positivity borders on being exhausting. For example, when asked about the NFC South, we learned his positive outlook extends to his rivals as well.
I think we got better. I think that the whole division, if you look across the teams, adding Clint Kubiak to New Orleans, Dennis Allen's already fantastic as far as the defense. He's really hard to go against. You look at Tampa, adding a guy like Liam Cohen, making sure that they got Baker and Mike back. You know, Antoine Winfield, huge pieces down there. Some of the youth that they drafted on defense last year, like they're going to be tough to deal with, you know. Go to Atlanta. I have the highest respect for Raheem. Went against him for years. He's a fantastic coach. They add Kirk Cousins. Now you get Ajero and myself connected here in Carolina to really build an offense that's going to be balanced, that's going to be attacking and versatile with Bryce, adding some skill. I really just think people are going to be really surprised about the NFC South this year and the level of football that comes out of it.
The Bucs piece of that blows me away. Did you hear what he said? Yeah, well, you know, the Bucs got Liam Cohen. Do you know who Liam Cohen is? Liam Cohen is their new offensive coordinator. He's saying the Bucs just got better by replacing Dave Canales. Yeah, the entire division got better. The Bucs, they got Liam Cohen. They replaced that, you know, that bum who was their OC last year. Oh, wait, that's me. And I just took their entire offensive staff. Ah, okay. This is the uber positive comment, though, that Panther fans are going to like to hear. He believes that Carolina could contend for an NFC South title, and here's why.
I think we're going to be competitive for the division this year. And what I'm saying is, if we play good football, if we can get the football right like we believe we can, and we can take care of the football, let the numbers take care of themselves, we'll be in the hunt. We'll be in every single game, which will give us an opportunity to be in the hunt for the division at the end. And if we can play great defense and run it, it'll carry us right late into the season.
Okay, a couple of things there. He was asked squarely if they thought they could contend for the division. If you disagree with him saying they can do that, how's he supposed to answer that question? No, actually, I think we're going to get smoked. We don't have a shot. Are you kidding? Secondly, when the Bucks have won three straight NFC South titles and Dave Canales is pulled from there and pretty much the entire offensive staff too, that division is up for grabs in a way that it wasn't before. And there is some insight in what he said there. It wasn't coach speak. There were some things that you can learn from that. The piece about taking care of the ball. He said at his first press conference, it's all about the ball. Carolina was not bad at protecting the football last year. Bryce Young had more touchdown passes than picks. They were bottom half in the league in turnovers. And that was with Bryce getting the snot knocked out of him. 63 sacks, 115 hits. They've invested in the offensive line. Austin Corbett, the center, the two guards that you've spent a combined $150 million on, 72 of that guaranteed. So with an improved line and you already already taking care of the ball pretty good, and that being an emphasis, he's right. If they are one of the best teams in the league at taking care of the ball, they're probably going to have a lot more shots at winning games. And in the NFC South, that means you have a shot at winning that division. The great Ian Eagle, who will be replacing Jim Nantz on the Final Four next week.
WD needs more of a thinking man's picture.
Our guest next.
This is it. Ready?
All right, hold on.
All right, do it, do it.
All right, listen up.
This is The Drive with Josh Graham.
Ah, yes, Petey Pablo, one of our state's finest sons. WD, do you know where he's from?
It's from Raleigh, isn't it?
Contrary to popular belief, no. Uh-huh. Greenville, America. Oh. Shout out to my East Carolina people. He references a lot of North Carolina cities in this song, but there is one area code in the state, the 919, that houses not one, not two, but three Sweet 16 teams this week. And the new lead announcer for CBS's NCAA tournament coverage, Ian Eagle, is going to be calling the action for two of them in Dallas. First NC State, Marquette, then Duke Houston in the nightcap on Friday. Ian is kind enough to join us now on WSJS. And Ian, words matter in our industry. You'll be tasked with trying to capture the moment for the 11th seeded Wolfpack. Are you going to frame them as a Cinderella?
I would be hard-pressed to call them that, Josh. I think the unpredictable nature of the tournament obviously creates some of these storylines, and the fact that they were nowhere close to being in the NCAA tournament, as we know, prior to the ACC tournament, leads you down that pathway of Cinderella. But this is a program that's won a national championship, that is in one of the Power Five schools, conferences in the country. It's not a complete shock that they were capable of going on this run. They just happened to be playing their best basketball when it mattered most. And if you watch them, they don't look like a Cinderella. They don't feel like a Cinderella. So I'm not sure if that's the tact I'm going to take on this one.
Marquette has the challenge of facing a unique talent in DJ Burns. He's also a difficult guy to officiate. Is he a difficult guy to broadcast? Are you ready for the DJ Burns experience?
No, that's to me what makes the job exciting, when it's not the same old thing and it's someone that does it a little differently and does it with some pizzazz and does it with a certain style. So I'm looking forward to it. He's just fun to watch. He plays with a lot of joy. He exudes that when he plays. Obviously, it's more of a throwback situation because we've gone farther and farther away from your typical old school post players. But he's got more to his game, and he's so nimble and he's so crafty. He's just fun to keep your eyes on. And certainly for a play-by-play man, it leads me to a place where I can use some creativity, and if the call meets the moment, that means you're doing your job correctly.
Does that mean Burns, baby, Burns? Or like, what are we thinking about in the right moment? I'm just trying to figure it out, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure I've had anything in my head percolating, but, you know, this is still a few days before we actually have to do the thing, so you never know what's going to come out of the moment.
Go DJ. That's my DJ. There's two of them on the team. They're pretty good. See,
Don't let him mess up your call.
Ian Eagle is joining us here. He won't do that. He's a pro. You had Duke in Brooklyn over the weekend. Does it feel like, this almost sounds strange to say this sentence coming out of my mouth, but I think it's a fair question. Does it feel like the Blue Devils are flying under the radar at all to you?
Yes, I agree. I think it goes to show you where people were with this Blue Devils program prior to the tournament, the fact that they had already been basically dismissed because of what happened at the end of the regular season against North Carolina, what happened against NC State in the ACC tournament. They got moved to a different pile. It's so funny how that works. We have recency bias, as we know. But I do think there was something to it. I just sensed a general feeling of uneasiness around Duke going into the first round. Not from John Shire and not from their players, but just those on the periphery. Anyone that I talked to, I got the same reaction, which was, yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know. Don't know about this group. That was the consistent messaging that kept popping up whenever Duke became a topic of conversation in Brooklyn. So they get it done against Vermont. It wasn't perfect by any stretch. They let Vermont hang around for a while. The Deloney play at the end of the first half, him pivoting, scooping from basically 15 feet away to cut it to, I think it was 5 at the break, gave you pause that they might have a self-fulfilling prophecy here with Duke. But second half, they got it rolling. And then the matchup with James Madison, where everybody, including yours truly, thought that the Dukes would be the more aggressive team, would be physical. It would be the same tone and tenor as the Wisconsin game that we saw in the first round from JMU. And it wasn't. A minute 40 into the game, Terrence Edwards Jr. picks up his second foul. And everything that we saw from the game against the Badgers, we didn't see in the second round from JMU. Then, throw into the mix, Duke just kept making shots. And they were riding McCain. The fact that Proctor shot the ball well, the fact that Roach looked very comfortable. It was among the best performances that they've had this year. And that's for a team that was ranked number 2 in the preseason AP poll. So it's a really good sign for John Shire and a good sign for this team that they have found themselves. And maybe under the radar is not the worst place to be if you're the Duke Blue Devils every now and again.
You are familiar with this by now. Ian Eagles with us. When you see WD in a press box, you ask what 80s comedy or whatever he's watched.
WD needs more of a thinking man's picture.
Yes, that drop plays whenever we pick movies. He watched A Time to Kill week.
Austin
for the first
Powers
time.
A couple of weeks ago.
He did. He knocked that
Whoa.
Out.
Yeah, big time.
We saved this for you. We did not pick the movie yesterday. We saved this for you. We put it to the audience. We narrowed it down to 4 movies, and now it's down to 2. You just got to tell us what the higher priority needs to be for WD.
Sure.
The Big Lebowski or Kill Bill Volumes 1 and 2?
No, Big Lebowski.
All right.
That's what I'm pulling for. Right there.
Big Lebowski is highly quotable. In fact, I quoted it in the last Duke game, connecting him to Filipowski. Big Filipowski, the dude abides.
That's great.
I didn't even know you did that. That's amazing, Ian.
The it's right there for the taking.
The dude abides.
That was on a big block. You could find it. It was said. It did not garner any kind of national attention, but those who know, know.
The big Filipowski. That's outstanding. No, you're Mr. Filipowski. I'm the dude. That's
exactly.
That's the Ian Eagle. We look forward to watching your call on Friday with NC State and Duke both in action. And who knows, you might get an all 919 area code matchup on Sunday. Congrats on having your first run through March as the lead announcer for CBS's and Final Four coverage. We look forward to watching that. And thanks for the time.
Truly appreciate it. It's always fun being on with you. I'll have movie picks next time we speak. And hopefully we get some of the madness and the dancing is of the kind that we like in Dallas. I think we're going to have 2 competitive games.
Oh, yeah. It's just there he goes. Thank you, Ian, joining us here. Big Filipowski.
I wish I could appreciate it more, but I will be.
It's just the title of the movie.
Yeah.
The Big Filipowski.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
He's really good. He's really good. Makes me want to take Kyle Filipowski's points over for Friday just to root for the big Filipowski. And the place to do that would be a place like, I don't know, Underdog Sportsbook? Underdog Sportsbook introduced to North Carolina first. North Carolina is a big deal to them. And Underdog's been a big deal for us. Hey, Underdog Fantasy, a lot of fun. Now Underdog Sportsbook. If you haven't downloaded it yet, iOS and Android, sign up with the promo code THEDRIVE, and you get what is called in the biz a first bet mulligan. What's that? That means that they will return up to $1,000 as bonus funds on your first bet if it loses. Wait, so I can bet up to $1,000, and if I lose the bet, I don't actually lose it? I get bonus funds for whatever I just put in? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's Underdog Sportsbook. Just use the promo code THEDRIVE. Must be 21 and older to gamble and present in North Carolina. Gambling problem? Call 1-877-718-5543 or visit morethanagame.nc.gov or call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply and can be found in the Underdog Sportsbook app. Just like when I took the Hornets against the Cavaliers the other day. That hit. Cavaliers covering the number against Charlotte. They play again tonight. The Cavs and Hornets, this time in Charlotte. Am I going to touch that? No. Best bets later on in the show.
Send me that cash out, fam.
The Lakers-Bucks game. That was great last night. Did you watch Austin Reeves?
No.
Hitting some big shots in OT?
I was watching Daisy decide to break up with Joey.
Oh, that's right. You were at my place watching that. I was multitasking.
Mm-hmm.
Daisy. Completely out on her. Yeah. Complete 180. Clip Sixers tonight, Phoenix, Denver. That's a lot of fun, too. But circling back to the ACC. We had Jim Phillips on the show yesterday, and he said they're looking to get the ACC schedule potentially down to 18 league games. In order to do that, though, you'll have to appease television. And we'll tell Jim Phillips how he could do just that next.
The Drive with Josh Graham, only on WSJS.
This might qualify as something that's good. Weekly positivity. In about 10 minutes or so, your chance to win concert and baseball tickets then as well. The Carolina Panthers have signed Jadeveon Clowney. My source, the Carolina Panthers. The caption, not clowning around.
It's pretty good.
They have him listed as a linebacker. Edge rusher type. You lose Brian Burns. You need somebody there. Now you need, I guess it's going to be Jadeveon Clowney and DJ Wanham, and you hope you develop DJ Johnson. Not a lot to be excited about defensively, given what's happened. Losing Frankie Louvu, losing Brian Burns, and now replacing him with Jadeveon Clowney. However, you trust in Ajiro Evero, who did a great job at making lemonade last year and having a top five defense. If he can figure out a way, even if the defense isn't as good as it was a year ago, still having a top 10, maybe even a top 12, 13 defense, you hope that the offense takes enough of a jump, given all the investment they've made there, that the Panthers can still be a competitive football team. That's a pretty big headline, Jadeveon Clowney now being a Panther. A question of the day, which in-state coach has the most to gain this week between Hubert Davis, John Shire, Kevin Keats, the Sweet 16 that starts tomorrow. And by the way, if you missed the Ian Eagle conversation where he just joined us a few minutes ago, you can find that on our YouTube channel in just a bit. Just search The Drive with Josh Graham.
WD needs more of a thinking man's picture.
And subscribe. Same for the Jim Phillips conversation yesterday. And speaking of that, it's time for the ACC to get creative with its scheduling. Jim Phillips is starting to do the circuit interview-wise, and it started with us yesterday right here on WSJS. And he said that they're looking at bumping back to 18 league games. The ACC right now has 20. They need to get to 18, they feel, to give them a better shot at getting more teams into the tournament, given the fact that the net seems to punish leagues with longer conference schedules. Because when you have teams playing conference games against each other, one of your conference teams has to lose as a result. That hurts your metrics. And with less non-conference games, you have less opportunity to juice your metrics with quad four competition or more quad one games. So that's why more flexibility, more ability to do interesting things to impress the committee with extra non-conference games. That's what coaches want. That seems to be what the ACC wants. What is stopping them from doing that, though? Television. Television funds all of it. We know this. That's what drives all the expansion. So, or all the realignment. So when the ACC agrees to a 20-game league schedule with its partner ESPN and the ACC network, why would the network be okay with them getting fewer conference games? Jim Phillips says that is the hurdle that they're going to need to overcome in order to get back to 18 games. Here he was on the show yesterday.
Again, I think you make a really good point. Contractually, we signed ourselves to that deal. And so it'd be incumbent upon us to be creative about if we wanted and felt after doing this work that 18 games is the best way to move forward, then we would have to offset those two conference games by playing quality opponents.
This is my idea. Or I'm co-opting an idea from a buddy of mine, Joe Ovius from the Ovius and Giglio podcast, who I don't think in the context of getting to fewer conference games brought this up at Operation Basketball ACC Media Days earlier this year, but I think could be the solution to appeasing everybody. The ACC needs to create a made-for-TV event to tip off the season. ESPN is looking for things to attract eyeballs to college basketball in the month of November. Here's the idea. Bring back the Big Four tournament in Greensboro. But instead of just the four ACC teams being there, how about you make it the eight traditional ACC members? So you invite you invite Clemson, you invite Virginia Tech, you invite, we're going to include them as a traditional member, by the way. I hope you're cool with that. You invite Georgia Tech to be part of this as well. And you have those regional schools participating, those eight invited to Greensboro. Then you send the other 10, which includes all those Big East schools, to Madison Square Garden. The ACC is never going to get the ACC tournament at MSG as long as the Big East exists. It's never going to happen. So if you want an event at the Garden and you want to make those Big East schools happy and all in their fields, in November, figure out a date where you could have five games played from 11 a.m. till late at night, 9:30. Five games that you play between those 10 schools, the Big East schools plus Cal, Stanford, and SMU. That's what you do. A made-for-TV event where each team plays one game, four games in Greensboro one day, five at MSG the day after that, or vice versa. And here's what that would do. It would be a compromise between coaches and television. Coaches get the two fewer ACC games that they want and more control of their schedule, but they have to compromise on something they didn't like a few years ago when the ACC network was introduced, opening their season with a conference game. Every other year being okay having one fewer ACC home game. Like, you're going to have to compromise that to get something you want from the network. Television's going to have to compromise two fewer ACC games per team, but you get this event that you can attach a sponsor to and have something that attracts eyeballs in the month of November. So it's time to get creative with scheduling. That's my best crack at trying to solve that issue. A reminder that registration for YMCA Camp Haynes and Summer Day Camp is open right now. If you haven't capitalized on this, ymcanwnc.org to sign up for summer camps and activities. Another thing that could qualify for weekly positivity in just a few minutes, opening day is tomorrow. Somebody left this in my office today, here in the studio.
I saw this.
Shohei Ohtani on the front page of Sports Illustrated, And the caption is, money can wait, winning can't. Is the SI curse still a thing, even if SI supposedly isn't going to exist much longer?
Is there an SI curse?
That's apparently a thing people talk about.
It was the Madden curse.
All anybody wants to talk about is Ohtani. At least they're talking about the sport, right? It's not the greatest reason to be talking about the sport, but talking about the sport nonetheless. The Orioles officially sold today to my guy, my BFF, David Rubenstein.
Saw that.
Duke alum.
It's officially a new era for you.
Saw him at the Duke Carolina game. Not a big selfie guy. Not a guy who's asking for pictures that often. Had to get that picture. Very excited about that. WD, what's your excitement level in your Yankees?
I'm excited. I mean, we got Juan Soto. I mean, I'm always, at least right now, I'm going to be a little skeptical even with that, just because
you're scared of the Orioles. I understand.
I'm not scared of the Orioles. I'm scared of the Yankees being great in the regular season and then flopping in the playoffs, like has happened in recent memory. But
there's a new juggernaut in the AL East that you have to be worried about that might spend some cash.
Yeah. It is cool, though. Ownership. You got to take a picture with Rubenstein. I got to take a picture with Aaron Boone. Look at that.
Wow. The first Duke Carolina game, you got a picture with Aaron Boone.
Right.
The second Duke Carolina game, got to.
We all win.
Jay Austin writes it. Money can wait, except for the interpreter. Interpreter.
Yeah.
Really? Someone writes it. Clowny news. Yeah, we just hit on that.
That's right. Not clowning
He's
around.
A Panther. No, they're not clowning around.
You're on the drive with Josh Graham.
If you have a question, it could be sports related or not, to ask us in Unusual Questions now that Darren Vaught is joining us. Your pick of tickets to Wake Baseball against North Carolina this Friday or on Sunday. A big series, the Deeks and the Tar Heels facing off. 336-777-1600 is the number to call now. The voice of USA Baseball that you know from ACC Baseball, etc. All-around baseball guy, Darren, joining us. We're going to take the week off from talking about ACC Baseball because Major League Baseball starts tomorrow, opening day. What is the number one question you have regarding Shohei Ohtani and this potential scandal? What does it meet Darren Vaught's stink test? Sniff test.
It's tough to pick one. There are a lot of questions, right? Like I as a person with not the kind of money to neglect a $4.5 million transfer, am a bit boggled as to how $4.5 million can just disappear and you not notice. Then again, I did not sign a, what was it? 700 bajillion thousand million dollar contract. So,
but my question is related to that actually, in the sense of what illegal bookie is allowing an interpreter to run up that type of credit of $4.5 million. I don't know what interpreters make. I'd be surprised if it was a million, if it's Shohei's interpreter, well, maybe a million, but even that, like, who's giving you $4.5 million of runway, giving you that type of credit before you're trying to collect?
If you go in, and I'm not absolving Shohei or anybody, because I mean, who knows? But if Ipe Mizuhara was to go into a bookmaker's establishment and simply establish, I am Shohei Ohtani's right hand person. Like, that's all you need. That's all the justice. You're like, okay, he's good for it. I saw the reports. I know the contract that's going on. And like, whether Ipe did it as, you know, part of this scheme that he and Shohei both had or whatever, right? Anything that you come up with there is speculation. And I think it's like, I understand interpreter is part of what he was for Shohei. But it goes a step even farther from that. There was an excellent piece pushed out on ESPN.com this morning that sort of went in depth about the level of isolation or the level of insulation that Shohei has had throughout his career from other teammates, right? And it, and the point, one of the main points that it was driving home is that Ipe was not simply, other major league players have interpreters, and that they are simply employed to be a bridge between languages. Ipe was way more than that, right? He was a right-hand man in a lot of senses, always a 4 or 5 steps behind Shohei, often carrying his things, keeping his schedule and his diet in check and things like that. I mean, he was a personal assistant even more so than an interpreter. So, you know, I think it's a pretty easy sell if you go into a business and you're looking for, even if you were looking for like a personal loan, right? It's look, I am the assistant to this guy who has signed hundreds of millions of dollars to play baseball. You know, I think that's a pretty easy sell.
Let's go to unusual questions with Darren Vaught.
Last week, guys, everybody made it out that I got mad at Josh and I left the press conference. That's not right. I thought it was an unusual question, and it's okay.
It's time for Unusual Questions with Josh Graham.
If you want Wake tickets facing North Carolina Friday or Sunday, 336-777-1600. Oh, this might be a first, a repeat caller on the show. Jew in Winston-Salem back with us. What's your unusual question, Jew? Jew, go right ahead.
Oh, okay, yeah. My question is, if you were a professional wrestler, what would your finishing move be?
Outstanding. I think people know now that Darren is a wrestling aficionado, so they're all wrestling questions. It always seems to be thrown at Darren Vaught. What would be your finishing move?
I mean, look, I'm not a large person, so it's not like I couldn't get away with like a big leg drop or anything. I got to come up with something creative. Josh, are you familiar with what a destroyer is?
No.
So it's kind of fabricated, but it essentially you just kind of like it's used as a reversal more often than not. And it's kind of like you flip over the person and do almost like a sitting powerbomb.
Oh, so that would be your move, the destroyer.
Some sort of variation of a destroyer would be cool. That would be cool.
I think maybe my move would be I wrestle with my glasses on, and right before I do the finishing move, just throw the glasses off, and then, I don't know.
Is that not going to create problems with, like, you know, vision?
Not if the person's already dead to rights and it's a finishing move.
No, at the point at which you need to be your sharpest, your finishing move?
Hey, these are used for distance.
I'd argue you do it the other way around. You begin without the glasses, and then you pull them out and throw them on for the finish.
Now I like that. I told you last night, and I meant this, that you inspired me to watch Manchester by the Sea last night. You're coming on the show. What I was thinking about, what's a movie that could cheer me up after watching this Bachelor finale with WD last night?
I heard was wild.
It was complete reversal on Daisy. We're not a fan of Daisy anymore. Grandstanding, it's bad. Not great, not a fan. And yeah, so I turned on one of the saddest movies ever to cheer me up from that. Manchester by the Sea just has me wondering, what is the sad, you love a good sad movie, what is the saddest a movie has ever made you?
That one honestly, Manchester by the Sea put me into a pit of despair for like a 2-week stretch. I was not.
Was it the scene in the police station where everything's being revealed, or is it when he's confronted with his wife at the end, his ex-wife?
I think more the end of the movie.
Yeah, not being able to process all of it. I gotcha. And this, Casey, these are not spoilers, by the way. No spoilers.
They're not. Casey Affleck's role hit. Like he nailed it. It was the scope of everything by the end that just sort of just like gut punch, hole in my chest for, I'm not even kidding. I thought about it constantly for a 2-week stretch.
Yeah. Titanic, I was filled with rage the first time I saw it at Rose. So it wasn't like sadness that I felt. Disney movies probably put me in that place the most.
Coco's on the list, buddy.
Up.
Coco's on the list.
You want to talk about Up?
Yeah.
Inside, or you want to talk about Inside Out? Or what's the one where it's about all the... That's Inside Out, where you have all the emotions. I don't know why I'm looking at WB as an ally.
It's coming out. There's a second one coming out.
Elemental.
Is out. No. There's another Inside Out.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, I actually forgot what the real answer to this question is, and I'm embarrassed to say it's the answer, but it's the answer. No movie has ever made me sadder than watching Click. Click with Adam Sandler.
Why?
Have you seen that movie?
No. I mean, I understand the premise.
Will wouldn't know, man. Like,
I know
like,
the premise of it.
Then watch the movie. You'll find out. But Click got me to a place. It's raining out, and he's down on the pavement, and there's a note in his hand. Yeah. That got me to a place.
That's like one that shouldn't have.
It caught you off guard. Like, it was intense, and it was warranted, but it wasn't. I wasn't prepared for it. That's why if you're going to come in here with a dog movie like Marley and Me, Well, everyone kind of saw that one coming. But Marley and Me, like it felt unnecessary. Do you have an answer to this question?
What was the? I was on the phone, so
saddest movie. Made you saddest. We've made you watch a number of them.
I'll like chime
Dead
in
Poet
too,
Society.
While he's thinking.
I thought you already did.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind on here.
Requiem for a Dream is pretty hopeless.
Yep.
Dead Poet Society was up there.
What's your unusual question, WD?
I guess staying on fiction. If you could swap lives with any fictional character for a day, who would it be and what would you do? For me, now see, I'm going to throw you a curveball. You might think I would go with a Star Wars character. Not
true. Superhero.
Spider-Man will be fun. I would like to be Harry Potter so I could fly around on a broom.
So you'd be a big nerd.
Nerd.
Of course. So I wouldn't have any other way.
Nerd.
Dating Hermione. Right.
Well, okay, that's silver lining there, because, boys, Emma Watson is...
I mean, that is...
We love Emma
That
Watson.
Is part of the trading, I suppose. It's a good question. I don't have a great answer to it. I imagine it would be like I'd probably just be Thanos for the day. Just be able to, you know, have the most power of anybody in the world. It's pretty cool.
I think it would be fun to be a minion. Just one of them, you know?
You look like a minion.
That could be fun.
What is your unusual question?
Who was the player on an old video game that had no business being great, but when you played out years and years and years of a franchise mode, you turned them like into a Hall of Famer.
Okay, maybe not franchise mode, but Pablo Sanchez, Backyard Baseball, probably the answer to that question.
No, but see, he was the greatest. I'm talking someone who had no business being good. I'm talking MLB All-Star 2001 for the Nintendo GameCube.
Yeah.
And I made Pokey Reese a Hall of Famer, okay? Like, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay, because I could have gotten really nerdy and been like, I put all my power-ups into, like, a side character on Final Fantasy X that...
Yeah, I need the sports equivalent. Yes, that.
I like this. I think the answer to this question... probably is Stephon LaFours, who was a Louisville quarterback that was drafted by the Panthers circa 2007, turned out to be a bust, but he was Jake Delhomme's third string guy, and I developed that guy to being pretty good on Madden.
Yes.
And that was the Madden that had, it was right after the Donovan McNabb year where you had the cone that you were throwing with. Might have been Sean Alexander. Can't quite remember specifically, though.
You know what? Madden's a place I wasn't even thinking about. Madden 04, the one with Vic
Ray
on
Lewis?
The cover.
Oh.
Where they made his speed a 98, so they needed to make everything proportional. So as a result, literally any quarterback could run on that game. Like, Rich Gannon was good before. I made Rich Gannon the dual-threat quarterback of a century. Like... I'm talking, I would rush for 2,000 yards a season with Rich Gannon in addition to throwing for 2,500.
That's been Unusual Questions with Darren Vaught. I wasn't just going to have Shohei be the only baseball question I ask you. Do you have a World Series pick? Is that something you think about?
I don't know that I've got one right now. I mean, it's kind of tough to
then
pick.
Other than the Dodgers, who do you like the most? If I take the Dodgers off the board, even though the Shohei stuff and Yamamoto's debut might have you a little skeptical.
The Yankees are up there with the addition of Soto, but I don't have as much faith in them as I would, for instance, the Astros. Like, pick Josh Hader to the Astros. It is a massive, massive deal. I think it might make them the best team in baseball.
Wow.
Sorry.
No mention of my
Orioles.
I know
you wanted the O's there. I know you wanted the O's. You wanted me to talk about Corbin Burns there.
I got that selfie with David Rubenstein at the Duke Carolina game. I was pretty excited about it. Still am.
They're up there. I mean, they're probably, you know, if I kept
Jackson Holiday in a month and a half, going to be up.
Yeah. I mean, if I would have given you two or three more teams, they're included in that two or three.
Yeah, it's just adding
top five or six. You can't be picky about top five or six now.
Yeah, just adding a chip on their shoulder. That's all you're doing, Darren. That's all you're doing, adding a chip, like a big old chip. Darren, where can we watch you this week? Anywhere?
East Carolina. They've got a series in the American against UAB, and they've actually just pushed. It was supposed to be Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It's a doubleheader on Friday starting at 1 on ESPN+, and then third game of the series at noon on Saturday.
Good Friday just got even gooder.
Gooder.
Darren Vaught, good to see you. That. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, see you.